Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about leadership courage. And that, of course, is us, because we are generally the leader. And we have to have a lot of courage to lead, to go forward, to help people, to help the group, to help maybe even the larger group achieve their success, reach their goal. Yes. So, as we often do on this show, because it's not scripted, it goes, and I see we have lots of people. Hello, everyone. It's not scripted. It goes wherever the show takes us, wherever the questions and thoughts take us. We're going to ask one of our basic questions so we get our topics, and then we're going to go forward in a practical manner. So, the question is going to be, what is courage within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, even a workshop or a seminar teaching those kinds of skills, teaching how to reach consensus, right? Yeah. So what is courage in leadership within that context? Oh, I see we have lots of people and quite a bit of agreement. I think I'm going to call this the first topic. I think is going to be, I'm going to call it, is insisting on fairness. Insisting on fairness, that everybody be treated in a fair manner, in an equal manner. Yes, and of course, neck and neck with that is number one, because Recipe for Peace Now, it's our only rules, and we like them lots and apply them always, is we need to have the courage as leaders to enforce the civility rules. To insist on them, to insist on our civility rules. And yes, we're going to take these topics for the new people and for everyone else too. Welcome, everyone. We have lots of participation. The civility rules, we're going to talk about each of these topics in turn, in depth, in a practical manner, because we like theory on this show. It's just fine. But we like to be practical even more. We like to know what to do about stuff. So I'm insisting on fairness, enforcing the civility rules. This is a real good one, too, that a lot of people are talking about. We need to have the leadership courage to stay impartial. Yeah, we're the third party impartial. We're the leader. We're not supposed to take sides. We're supposed to take everybody and lead them towards the successful outcome, right? Yeah. You know, this is kind of a good point, too. People are saying, that a lot of folk are saying that you need to have the courage to stay on as the leader, to remain the leader. Yeah, because it's hard, because it's time-consuming. Because it's just plain ordinary harder than you thought it would be. Yeah. So you need to have the courage to stay, to remain as the leader. And as the opposite, the flip side to that, which a lot of people are talking about, thank you, everyone, for all of your participation. You also might need to have the courage to relinquish leadership for the good of the group. Yeah. You mean the courage to stay for the good of the group and for the cause, so to speak. But you might need courage, which might take even more courage, to relinquish some of your leadership at least, if not all of it. Yeah, to say, you know, I think it would be best if I stepped down or I had help, right? Yeah. So to relinquish also takes courage. We've got a lot of topics today. I hope we make them all in an hour. A lot of people are talking about the experience to move forward, even if you're the courage to move forward, even if you're experiencing setbacks. Yeah, sometimes things just aren't working out real good. And it seems kind of depressing. But you do need the courage to keep going on it and not just give up and go, wow, that is really hopeless. I'm not going to do that. So you need the courage to keep moving forward and to keep having enthusiasm too. Because after all, you're the role model as leader, aren't you? Yes. And if you've really kind of lost the will to go forward, it'll show. And then you can't expect your participants to do it because they follow you. You're the person that really keeps it all going. Yeah, they follow you. You can't expect them to just wander to do it themselves. They follow you. And you know, this last one, it does take courage. This is kind of my specialty. The courage to come in when other leaders have already failed, as people are putting it. Yeah, Tom and others, the courage to come in when other leaders have already failed. You've got something that needs to be done. It has been, a group has been attempted, a team has been attempted. They didn't get very far and they gave up and threw up their hands, or they're still struggling and there's still a group, but it's just not getting there. And they've got animosity besides, yes. And usually in those situations, not only animosity, but also some sort of a power play. Right? Yeah, somebody feels that they should be better than somebody else type power play. Always charming. Yeah. Yes. And yeah, it is a challenge, and you need courage to sort that out. So let's go one by one. We're going to start with the courage to insist on fairness. It's courage to act with fairness, really. Yeah. Grace and others are saying that means that everyone is treated with equal respect. Yes, thank you. Everyone is treated with equal respect. Now, we as a group may decide that the idea that you came in with needs some modification, and we're gonna deal with that. But that doesn't mean that we don't treat our participants with respect. We treat everybody fairly and with the respect that we would like to be shown ourselves. Yeah, and we know that we'd like to be shown lots of respect. Yes, treated with equal respect. Tim and others are saying that in order to have the courage to lead with fairness, to act with fairness, and insist on it, everyone's ideas must be considered carefully and fully, even if the leader's experience indicates that it will not work. Everybody, even if in your experience, in your opinion as leader, and you've the experienced one in the room, what's being suggested is not practical. You can't just say, that's not practical, let's move on. No, we need, that's not treating everyone with equal respect. We will consider it, not forever, because we need to move forward. You will point out the practicalities of it in a polite and civil manner that is respectful to all concerned, because as leader, we are models of the civility rules, right? And then you will lead the group towards a more likely successful outcome, right? Yeah. You can't just stand up there and say, that's not going to work, let's move on. No, we have to think it through. But if your experience, which is why you've been hired, if your experience tells you that that's been tried and there's other ways to do it more neatly, more successfully, then you might suggest those other ways, without denigrating the person who brought in the idea. Suki and others are saying you have the courage to insist on fairness, and you also must have the courage to have patience. Patience, yes. Ah, three deep breaths. Not necessarily outwardly. Not because that's body language that indicates that you're feeling kind of bored. No, we're going to take three mental deep breaths privately, and we are going to have some patience with the process. Now, I've seen it where leaders have an over amount of patience and the process gets bogged down and doesn't get anywhere. Sometimes that's why groups fail. Now, there's a difference between having the courage to insist on fairness and giving it some time and some patience and some hearing, yes. As Charles and others are talking about listening skills, right? Yeah. And there's a difference between that and then helping the group to move forward so that we go forward and just getting the thing bogged down and not get anywhere. I see that sometimes. Sometimes I'm actually brought in and groups have failed because they never got past the patience and listening and everybody gets their fair turn part, but they're not getting to any kind of consensus. You see, they're over-considering. There is such a thing that you just keep chasing your tail, so to speak. Yeah, I know it's an Americanism, but it's probably there's dogs everywhere and they chase their tails. But yeah, there's a difference between everybody gets their fair shot and we're not moving forward. So you have to determine that. I am very big on giving everybody time limits for speaking, especially after we've had the first where everybody told you what they think, right? Because it keeps us on schedule. Otherwise, you get ramblers. And then you get lack of attention span. Have you ever had somebody do that to you? They're not, it's not that they're nuts or they're not intelligent, but they just keep going over the same thing and they're just rambling and your eyes are glazing over. Yeah, no. So there's patience and listening skills. You not only have to have the courage to have them, but you have to have the courage as leader to know when we've had enough, when we've everybody's had their fair shake and we're going to move forward and reach consensus and make a modified plan, taking everything into account. Yeah, so there's a certain point at which you will know it from your experience and from the group dynamic and the body language and everything else and from carefully thinking through as leader whether or not we've indeed covered it. We've done it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's courage to taking the reins also to really leading and not just being passive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's come on to our next one, which is the civility rules. My personal favorite. Yay! The civility rules for those of you who are new and also for everybody, because I have to think of them and talk about them each time whenever I see a group. The civility rules basically say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude. We will give everybody get a fair chance to speak. We will listen with politely and quietly with thought. We will not do body language that indicates that we are less than enthusiastic, right? Mm-hmm. And we as leaders will have the courage to enforce these rules. First off, you have to tell them the rules because how are they going to know? You know, you say, oh, that's inherent. Everybody knows them. They might know them, but they don't do them. So you have to tell everyone this is what's going to be. This is the process. This is what I'm going to do. Some groups, yes, people asking about writing it down. Some groups are more prone to doing this on their own than others. Depends how diverse the group. Depends how contentious the issues, right? It depends on lots of things. It depends on if you've got one or two charmers in the group who would like to hijack it and go rude. Yeah? Yeah, that too. Mm-hmm. So it depends on whether or not you have to actually write them down, you announce them. I must confess, generally speaking, I announce what the civility rules are. We will not be rude to one another. We're going to be taking turns. And I show them that when we have speaking and everybody gets their turn to tell what they think, we time it because we want to get out at a reasonable hour and we've only got so much time. So I use an actual egg timer, a cooking timer. It goes ding, and you can see how it's clicking off. Yeah, I know it makes some people nervous, but it does let everyone know that they are being treated fairly, because it is human nature, really just human nature, to think that somehow someone who doesn't have your viewpoint got more time to talk about it than you did, that you're being treated unfairly. It's human nature to think that. It just is. And quite frankly, you want to combat it. You want to show everyone that they have exactly the same amount of time, amount of thought, and everybody listens politely, please. Yes. So I announce them. If I've got a group that really needs help with the civility rules, I might announce actual rules and not just the idea that we will not be rude to one another, right? I don't generally write them down. The reason being, if you've got a group like that, they're going to try to find a loophole. They're going to try to circumvent the civility rules. Mm-hmm. I talk to people privately. I make a speech at the beginning. I apply peer pressure, you know, so that everybody else goes, you know, you've hijacked this person's speaking. We're all going to not listen to you, type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The key to the civility rules is that they must also be fairly enforced. We talked about fairness just now. Mm-hmm. They must be fairly enforced. You can't enforce the civility rules against somebody just because you find them annoying. It would be fun. No, but you can't do that. You've got to enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly, not take a side, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, as Scott says, first they're announced and then they're always in use. First the civility rules are announced, so we know how we're supposed to act, and then they are always in use. You cannot let incidents slide just because we're all getting tired and like that or something. No. The civility rules are always with us, as they say, and they must be enforced. They've told about, right? Then enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Mm-hmm. Yes, as Mohammed says, you can't let the situation spiral out of control and then try enforcing the civility rules. Mohammed, that is so true. Mohammed says you can't let the situation spiral out of control and then try enforcing the civility rules. You can't get it back. You've lost control of the group. You're going to have a whole session where you talk about it and like that. And somebody's going to call, they're going to call me in on you. They're going to call in an outside third-party impartial to get back control of the group, get back control of the group dynamic so that we can actually work together and reach consensus and not just be fighting around and have a bully in charge. No. Yeah, we're going to talk about coming in, the courage to come in when other leaders have already failed down the line. That's a lot of times it's because they don't have the civility rules firmly in place. They didn't know that they needed it. They didn't think about it. But, yeah, you do need them. Take my word for it. And needs to be done always and immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good point, too. Joyce and others are saying not once you get the civility rules down and once everybody understands them, they're really applicable to life. She says they apply to real-life situations. Yeah. Once you learn this idea of how to deal with people, you're going to deal more successfully. And I tell my people this because it seems kind of picky-ewing when you're sitting there maybe. And I tell them, you know, the civility rules really make your marriage better. They really apply everywhere. Yeah, which is really quite remarkable, but true. Mm-hmm. Once you think about how to, in a civil manner. Mm-hmm. Then you think about it all the time. What's our next topic? It's the courage to be staying impartial. Mm-hmm. As Padma and others are saying, you need to keep your opinions private. Yes, please. Keep your opinions private. You're the leader. You're not supposed to be taking a side, right? Now, sometimes you don't have a side within your group. You all agreed on something, and that's why you're going forward together, right? But you're on a side in the outside world because there's opposition. There's people who have a competing or an exact opposite idea, right? Yeah. And that's different. Within your group, you were the impartial, right? Staying impartial, not favoring one over the other. But with outsiders, well, you're the leader of this group. You can be as non-impartial and as enthusiastic and as certain of your side as you'd like, right? Yeah, because that's for outsiders. You know, yes, thank you. People are talking about the spokesperson idea. I suppose we can do it right here. We've talked about this in prior shows. Excuse me, I take a sip of water. Sorry. We've talked about this in prior shows, which are archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. And, yeah, it would to not only staying impartial, but to really to have a spokesperson so that your group has a unified front to the media and to the public. Right? I'm in favor of appointing a spokesperson, somebody who talks to the media, somebody who works a blog input, you know, texting, something like that, and not everybody doing it. First of all, I really don't want everybody doing the internet thing, where as we're working on it, they're blogging and texting kind of snippets of opinion and stuff. No, 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 no. We will not do that. But we do need a spokesperson if it's going to be a contentious issue and you want to have a unified idea put forward from your group, right? Yeah, some things aren't worth real media attention, but some things, they're kind of lend themselves to it, and you need to show a unified ability, a unified front, so that we all stick together. We all find the same ideas, the same, all coherent, right? Yeah. So a spokesperson is a mighty fine thing. Mm-hmm. And the spokesperson is usually, well, no, they're not really impartial, are they? They are impartial when dealing with internal, the people in the group, but very enthusiastically partial when dealing with the media because they're promoting a side. They're promoting something. They're promoting an idea. Yeah. What about staying impartial? The courage to stay impartial. Padma and others are saying keep your opinions private. Yes, you certainly do. Vincent says you allow participants to reach consensus. Staying impartial, you kind of lead the participants in a certain way so they reach consensus. You kind of shepherd them all towards the middle, right? So that we can get a unified idea and present it to the public. Mm-hmm. Or maybe to a politician or something. We'll present it to another third party. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So keep your opinions private. Allow the participants to reach consensus. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very good point. And I forget, and I do it, but I do it automatically now, and then I forget to actually say it on these shows. But one of the main things to be the courage to stay impartial, Ellie and others are saying that you need to be aware of your own body language, like tone of voice and choice of words, because it's conveying something. Mm-hmm. It's conveying an opinion. It's conveying confidence. It's conveying an idea about the group dynamic, how you present, how you speak, what your body language is. Yes. Do you ever see one of those television news hour things where a public official, I'm going to say a police commander or something, a public official is making a statement about something or making a speech? And then on the television, there's people behind him or her, right? They are lesser officials, but they're officials nonetheless, usually. maybe spouses, maybe not spouse, a child, whatever, adult child. But in any event, they are people that are on camera, but they're not the speaker. You ever watch their body language? It's fascinating because they don't think about it, and they're on camera, and they're reacting to the speech with their body language, right? Right. Yes. Yes, and it's kind of the people are saying it tells you a lot about their home life. I suppose that is a lot of times the people in the background are in the same category, in the same business, but they are not the spokesperson. But they're kind of doing body language in the back. I actually train people not to do that, to try to remain still and look alert, because it really shows. Yes. And then, of course, the news media takes it apart. But, yeah, so you need to keep your opinions private, allow participants to reach consensus, and be aware of your own body language and tone of voice, right? And choice of words makes a difference, too, because it conveys something, right? And words change over time also. And so you have to think about what you're saying. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, people are asking about change of words. Sometimes, at least in the English language, sometimes words that were rude get adopted by the group that the word was used against, and they adopt it in a positive manner, and it becomes an okay thing. I'll explain that better. Okay. Now, I don't give me a whole bunch of stuff about how you feel about the topic. It's kind of like marijuana is a topic. Okay. In the United States, homosexuality has become more accepted. In fact, people of the same sex can now marry. There was a Supreme Court decision. And years ago, the word queer, Q-U-E-E-R, was extremely insulting. It was really rude to call somebody that. But then kind of, I'm going to call it the civil rights movement of the homosexual community. They kind of made something called gay pride, right? And they adopted the word queer and made it okay. They call themselves that. I'm queer and I'm here is one of the chants, right? And so that's an example of a word that started out rude being used in a positive manner, but it is generally, and this is of course generally, done by people who are part of the subgroup, right? By people who are homosexuals. They can refer to themselves as queer. I'm not at all certain that that's appropriate for a non-homosexual. I would not use it. I'm not a homosexual, and I wouldn't call somebody that because I'm not certain that it wouldn't be rude for me. But see, words change, meaning changes, and that's how come sometimes we have writings that are very much in dispute, and you have to go back to the original time in which the item was written. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, you can stay impartial, and you need to be able to be careful of your own words so that they don't show partiality, because people pick up on it. Mm-hmm. Your own words and your own body language. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the next one, or we're not going to make it through. Mm-hmm. The next one is the courage to remain as the leader. The courage to remain and really stick it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ezra says you need the courage to remain as leader even when it becomes against your own self-interest. Kind of against your self-interest. You could make money by switching sides, for example. I have that sometimes. Once, however, I give my word, and I'm helping one side or the other, sometimes the position would like you not to be the leader because you're really good at it, and they want someone weaker, someone they can manipulate a little more, perhaps. And so they offer you a position on their side, a lucrative one that's easier than what you're doing now. I don't take those because I have moral standards, right? Courage to remain as a leader even within your own, against your own self-interest. I don't switch like that unless I've actually been convinced issue-wise, but not just for money. Mm-hmm. But that would be an agreement that's against your own self-interest, and you remain as a leader anyway because it's important. Mm-hmm. Courage to remain leader. A lot of people talk about obligation. Cheryl says you need to fulfill your obligation to attempt consensus even when there's a very large dispute. Attempt consensus. You've signed on as the leader. You, somebody asked you and you said yes. You might even be being paid, which is wonderful. But you need to make sure that obligations are fulfilled. And Dennis and others are talking about when no one else will accept the challenge. It needs to be done. It needs to be led. There's kind of a group in place. It's kind of soft. You know what I mean? Not real settled in membership. There's a lot of interested people. They need a leader. Mm-hmm. You're really busy. I have this all the time. You've got a full plate, but you are interested in the issues, and usually on a social good, a societal good type level. You're interested in it. You'd like not to do it, to do the leadership job, because it's time-consuming for one thing, right? But you look around and no one else will accept the challenge. So you're going to have the courage to remain as the leader. There's nobody else who'll do it. Yeah, and at least not adequately in your opinion. And I must confess that I'm kind of a perfectionist, so maybe my opinion of other people's skills, you would think that they were perfectly adequate. But if no one else will accept the challenge, you've got to have the courage to remain as leader. I have this sometimes with boards, be a board member. You can go off a board after your term is finished, which is usually a couple of years, but you're supposed to kind of search around for your replacement, right? And you have to know someone who'll accept the challenge. Yeah, that's the bottom line on that. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we talked about the courage to remain as leader because they really, 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 really need you, and there's no one else who's going to do it. How about the courage to relinquish membership, to give it up? Now, generally, you don't give it up completely unless you completely lost interest or your term limit is up, right? There's a certain term limit. Although, quite frankly, boards are getting less and less term limits. At least around here they are. They like you forever. Yes. So you're going to have to relinquish some of the leadership, right? And as Francis says, it's putting the benefit of the group with the issue and the issues before personal benefit. Yes, sometimes you are no longer the expert. There's somebody who could do it better, and you know it. So you might relinquish your membership, your seat, your leadership, or you might bring someone in and co-lead, both lead, right? This happens a lot when different groups who are of the same mind, the same general idea, the same need, band together for economical purposes, really. They'll have more resources, more people, and like that if they get together. Mm-hmm. And they can fight as a unified front. But this means that you've got at least two people who were leaders by themselves of their group, right? The two that are getting together. You've got to decide how that's going to work out. Are we both going to step down and let a third party handle this because they'll see it with new eyes? Are we going to truly share, which I think is unadvisable, unless you've got real, real distinct areas of expertise? That's different. How are we going to work this out? That's the courage to relinquish leadership, at least in part. I've seen it done where they share the responsibilities. I've seen it done where people have different skill sets and they're quite complementary. Bryce and others are saying both leaders should relinquish some autonomy to become larger and more effective. Yeah, that's the idea. In a perfect world, everybody would understand that. That we're going to get bigger. Bigger is better, has more pull, has more power. Let's do this. Let's each of us kind of relinquish some and gain some and make consensus and be the gatekeepers. That's probably the best way to relinquish leadership because you really haven't. You've just kind of expanded it to encompass more things. This is a good point, too. Cho says that it may be when you've got two leaders and the groups are kind of merging for effectiveness. Cho says that may be a move to a bigger arena, like corporate positioning, as a change of team and not a demotion. Yes, this must be at least promoted as that, as a change of team and not a demotion. You're not being thrown out. You're going to be with us. You're going to be at the helm. But it's going to be a little bit shared now, how we're going to do the sharing, right? And, yeah, it is a move to a bigger, better place in the Internet, if nothing else, a bigger, better place in the world so that you can have more effect. Everybody wants that. Really secretly they do. What's our next one? Oops, we may run out of time. It's the courage to move forward, even though there are setbacks. Yeah, the courage to move forward. Things aren't going all that well. It looks like we're going to kind of get stuck. Let's have the courage to move forward, even though we've had a setback, right? Yeah. Maria says all setbacks are temporary. And if you're flexible, all setbacks are temporary if you are flexible in finding a solution. Well, yeah, kind of modify the solution maybe so that we know it's something that we can get to, that the setbacks will not stop us, so that we can have a success and work from success and not from despair, right? Not from failure. You always want to work from success. Very important. Yeah, all setbacks are temporary. I tend to think that way, and I try to encourage my groups to think that way, that all setbacks are temporary. We can get past it. We may have to modify a little bit. Yes, Hayden and others are saying you may need to redefine success if you need to analyze the possibilities. You may need to redefine success. Maybe not ultimate success, but maybe the success that could be accomplished now needs to be redefined, needs to be thought about, right? Yeah. Excuse me. I seem to be losing my voice slightly, which in my case would be a tragedy. Pardon me. Just got off a plane recently. Oh my God, everybody seems sick. You ever have that? They're all coughing. You could see the air. It's like, ooh, I need a mask. And also the courage to move forward. You need to analyze what's going on. You might need to call in an expert. Yes. Lisa says sometimes it's too soon for the ultimate goal. You need to take steps to accomplishment. Too soon. Sometimes it is. We've jumped a few steps that we didn't know were there. And now we've got to find out what to do about that and we may indeed need to make our steps closer together and redefine this success, how it got to where it is, but not the entire world's success, right? It's a redefining ours, the courage to move forward even if there's setbacks. Now, here's one that I do a lot. As leader, you need the courage to come in when others have already failed. Courage to come in when others have already failed. First of all, you got to come in with a mindset. And the mindset is that we haven't failed. We're just having a temporary setback because we don't know exactly what to do. Much different than failed is completed. We're done for. Mm-mm. We're going to have a temporary, well, redefining maybe. Mm-hmm. We're going to take oftentimes the same people because for some reason they are the makeup of the group. They can't be moved. I deal a lot with multinationals. And a lot of times that's true. You've got a group that's having a temporary setback, kind of bigly, yes. And well, you can't change people. You can't swap them out. However, it has been my experience that you can redefine the group. The easiest way to do that is to have like a powwow session, have a session beforehand with everybody. A little bit of treats doesn't hurt anything either. You know, Recipe for Peace now is big on potlucks and food. To have everybody come together, see what's going on, ask the 5W questions. Yes, as Tomas and others are talking about. And we're going to get to it. Hang on. And then make new teams. See, that reshuffles the group in a way that doesn't offend anyone. Because you've got to, they're set. The members are somewhat set. It's just a question of reshuffling how they react to each other. Mm-hmm. So new teams. Mm-hmm. So we've come into a situation where it's already not going all that hotsy-totsy, yeah? And we are the paid third-party impartial. Did you notice I said paid? You should always get paid for your work unless it's truly an organization you believe in and you want to help voluntarily, right? Right. They've already having some problems. Mm-hmm. So what should we do? Mm-hmm. First of all, I kind of establish that it's a new day. We're having transparency. Mm-hmm. I explain about the civility rules. I explain about what is expected. Yep. And I explain and I answer any questions, any general questions. Mm-hmm. It gets us off to a good start because then people understand that there's a new sheriff in town. And we're going to follow her lead. Then we're going to break out the transparency rules, right? Mm-hmm. Then we're going to see what it is that takes us apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to rearrange the status quo. People like it. That's why they're there. You can hide in the status quo, right? But we're going to need some experts. We're going to need to have the new leader help us through the transition process. Mm-hmm. Yes, as George and others are saying, the main thing is the civility rules. We will be civil. Mm-hmm. Now, Hussein is breaking out the 5W questions. Thank you. Very important always, but it kind of fits under this particular topic of coming in when others have perhaps failed, because you need to break them out. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. Very important because it gets you down to the bottom of things, gets you to know stuff, gets you to understand what's going on. Who, what, where, when, why. Not all at once. You break each one out when you need them to know the why we fail, what your opinion is, right? Yeah. Do we announce that we have the civility rules already announced? Because your opinion cannot be pointing across the table and saying because he is a intransigent. No, 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 no. We're going to actually find out not that you're mad, but who, what, where, when, why. And then we are going to set aside our petty differences and we're going to work it through, right? As what? As a team. Yes. But we've got to get together for knowing what we're doing. And when after we ask those questions, or maybe we need to ask them in private, I am quite a big recipe for peace now is quite fond of the idea of food in the room, right? The food is a tool. It keeps us together, actually in the room, right? It gives us something to do that is not something we're going to fight about, because everybody likes to eat. And perhaps this is the most important, it allows the leader, that would be us, to have the courage to talk with each, perhaps privately, each of the participants who are not actually practicing the civility rules as well as they could, to find out why and tell them why they're going to do it the right way from now on. There's always a variety of reasons why you'd like to, from that would be the right thing to do, to I've been brought in by management and I can report you. I mean, you know, there's different people respond to different incentives to actually activate the civility rules than others, right? Right. Yeah. So it depends. And I'll say that. It depends. It depends on whether or not this group has been in business a really long time. Whether you're the first new sheriff in town. Sometimes you're the eighth, right? Yeah. Civility rules always apply. The 5W questions always apply. You'd be surprised. People love the 5W questions because nobody's ever asked them before, and they feel that somebody should have. Yeah, exactly. So we're going to have a little bit of food in the room. Yes, I left a little bit of time for the recipe because I know you guys like it. We're going to have some food in the room because it gives us something to do, something to talk about, and it keeps us all in the room so we don't waste a lot of time. Where is this participant? Has anybody seen him or her? Right? Yeah, because people also have different concepts of timing. Mm-hmm. So, if we're going to have food, and we are, we're going to have to, we'd like to take a survey. This survey is whether or not anybody has an allergy, a prohibition, some sort of food they can't eat, some sort of religious prohibition perhaps, right? Yeah. We want to know because we don't want anybody not to have a good time. We're creating a convivial atmosphere that is conducive to reaching consensus, right? Right. You will disseminate this list. Tell everybody. You will also, people, to when they come with something, to say what's in it, bring a little card that says what's in it, not just what it's called, so that I can run my eye down the card and find out if I can eat it, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, and also I think that we should all have a safe recipe in the room. Not too many ingredients. My people would have eaten them before in my area, and they're for sure nobody's allergic to them or anything. And an adventure recipe after that. This is the adventure recipe because it's the one that's been hanging around for a few weeks because we haven't gotten to the recipe part. But we got to, I think we're going to have time for one. This is an adventure recipe and not a safe one because it has pork. Now, you've taken the survey, you've made your lists. If people can eat pork, they have no objection to it. It's yummy. If they can't, you could substitute chicken. You would have to, of course, be careful to cook it completely through. And I am loath to say this because I think that it needs to be handled very carefully. But I have in my day used cubes of cooked turkey, right? Yeah, because it's delicious and this actually works with it. And you've got the leftover turkey, but be careful it hasn't gone bad. I feel the same about cooked cubed ham, because you could do the same with it, make kind of pieces and do it. This might even work for meat, but re-cooking meat that's already been cooked, not so good. So yeah, I think it's going to make it tough. I would use either chicken or actual cubes of ham. But yeah, that's up to you, what you've got. So this, I'm going to call it a pork and vegetable stew, because that's how I usually make it. Let's have 2 pounds of nice lean pork, like a pork loin or something like that. We're going to cut it into pieces, cubes, I'm going to call them. Let's have a couple tablespoons of all-purpose flour. We're going to do a little bit of coating. A teaspoon of ground coriander. Yeah, it's just delicious. Let's have, I like cinnamon in this. I don't know why I always use cinnamon when I use other spices like coriander. So I'm going to put in a tablespoon of ground cinnamon. You think that's too much, then put in less. I just like it. Let's have a tablespoon of olive oil, maybe a couple of tablespoons. A nice sweet onion that's chopped. I like a thing that out here is called a Vidalia. It's a very large, very sweet onion. I'm not fond of bitter in my recipes. And this is kind of a more delicate recipe. I got the onion. Let's have a 16-ounce can of diced tomatoes, juice and all. Just pop up, open the top. You want to make your own, go for it. I'm going to use the can. A couple tablespoons of tomato paste. Let's have 2 cups, maybe a little more. We're going to look at it as we go, of chicken stock. You don't have it, you can use vegetable stock. Well, chicken stock looks better, though. It's not so dark. Let's have half a dozen carrots that we're going to chop up. Pardon me. Let's get some squash in here. It's a winter dish because it's nice and nice. It's winter around here at least. Let's have 3 cups of diced small cube squash. I like the yellow squash. I will tell you that in my neck of the woods, you can buy that frozen. And it's fabulous. You just spread it out and thaw it out and pat it dry so you don't add too much moisture. And also so it's not freezing cold in the pot and it cooks well. A squash is kind of a hard thing to cut, and you can get them pre-cut, which is really quite nice. So 3 cups of that because it looks nice and it's kind of sweet. And we're going to have a whole bunch of rice that we're going to serve it with or over, depending on how you think about rice. Yeah, I like the only thing I have that only does one thing is a rice cooker, because I do these so much and pretty much everything goes with rice rather well. So you might consider it. Usually I object to stuff that can only do one thing and it's kind of big. But a rice cooker, that's kind of worth it. Now we're going to take that nice pork. We're going to cut it into either strips or chunks, depending on how you like it, and what kind of cut of pork you're going to use. Cut away anything that's fat or hard, like gristle. Remember the flour and the spices, yeah? The coriander and the cinnamon and a little bit of flour. Let's take our pork and we're going to toss it into the flour till it's all nice and well all coated. Quite frankly, I do use the plastic bag trick, where you put the dry coating and all of the pork all cut up already into a big plastic bag, and then you shake it all around, and it gets everything done real fast. It doesn't have to be so even. It just needs to be kind of coated, yeah? And then, you know what? I do, there's still flour and spice in the bottom, because there will be. I don't throw that out. I actually cut the paper bag so I can get the plastic bag, excuse me, so I can get to it, and we're going to use it later in this recipe because it's delicious. It's got all kinds of good stuff in it. Okay, that oil, we're going to heat it, big pan. We're going to cook the onion. It's softened 5 minutes, maybe less. Let's add the pork. Turn it around and around, about 5 minutes or so, brown on all sides. You know that nice little spiced flour that's still in the bag from when we coated it? Let's sprinkle it in. Then about 2 minutes, makes all the little spices come, and it also coats the pork kind of nice. We've got the yumminess in there. We've got the tomatoes. We've got the onion and the flour and the herbs and like the spices. Let's gradually add the tomatoes. I say gradually because if you just plop them in, you're going to get a real big splash up because it's a very hot pan, right? Yeah. You know that took the pork out, right? Yeah. Add the pork. We've cooked it, a little bit of flour, and then the tomatoes, and the stock, a little thyme, stir, so that we don't get lumps and everything's incorporated. Add the carrots, bring the whole thing to a boil. Let's add the pork now. The carrots are going to get softer. The pork's already basically cooked through. We're going to reduce the heat to cut and cover the pot, and we're going to simmer it an hour and a half. If you can and you have the facilities in the room where you're doing the negotiation, it smells fabulous. And it cooks for quite a while on the low heat. It goes bubble, bubble, bubble. It smells fabulous. Everybody wants to stay for food. This is good. We've got everything in the pot, right? It's simmering. Yum, yum, yum. And you might need a little bit more stock, depending on how you think about it, right? And now we're going to add our squash. Because I'm using the frozen kind, and it's already soft. If you're using the hard, real kind, you're going to have to add it earlier because it's not going to cook through, right? Another 15 minutes, take a look at it. It's delicious. Everything is tender. Everything is yummy. We're done. All we've done really is we've thrown some fabulous stuff into a big pot, let it simmer on the stove, did a little bit of timing with it. Yay, team. It's easy. It is delightful. Yes, you can add more vegetables if you'd like. Really, we just basically had the carrots and the onion and like that. I have added pepper, green pepper and yellow pepper and red pepper to this. It looks very nice. You add them kind of late in the game because you don't want them to go soggy. And it kind of gives it some color, a little bit more substance. And also, and I mean this in the nicest way, it kind of extends the dish a little bit more. Right? Yeah. Yes, and anything that is frozen, of course, needs to be thawed and wiped with a damp cloth and then put in. So, serve rice next to it. Easy, delicious, easy to serve. And also, it smells really nice in the room. And you know, that's something you don't think about, but it is a big deal. It's something that's really, really good and that you want to really foster so that you go, oh, that's delightful. Well, yes, it is. So, my friends, we are nearly out of time. We will get to another recipe next time, I hope. I've been trying to keep the little bit of time at the end for it because I know you guys like it. I get emails when I don't do the recipe. It's like, what happened to the recipe part? Oops, it's coming. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Yeah, you can contact us either way. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.